This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM's Malaysia Day special is presented by Masing.
Good afternoon, I'm Sumitra Selvaraj, and this is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture. Every year, Malaysia Day is marked on the 16th of September to commemorate the union of Malaya, North Borneo, Sarawak and Singapore. The relationship between the various parties has vacillated between fractured to tenuous to perhaps obliging as an imbalance of power and disenfranchisement continues to exist. Still, every year on the 16th of September, the now Sabah and Sarawak are feted as being part of the family, with Indigenous culture spotlighted as part of Malaysian heritage. Have you ever thought about how Sabahans and Sarawakians feel about the same tropes gussied up year in, year out, in the name of unity? Norman Goh, formerly of Malaysia Kini, and Joseph Sipalan of Thomson Reuters join me in the studio today to share their insights. Now, I'm fully aware of the irony of talking about tokenism in the run-up to Malaysia Day, but what I really want to know is, do you both feel that the fating of Sabah and Sarawak in the run-up to Malaysia Day is tokenism? Norman, we'll start with you.
It somehow feels like it does feel like tokenism. I mean, a lot of Sarawakians like I do, because Malaysia Day was only, we only started to celebrate it on, I think, about 2016 and things like that. It was during a Sarawak state election. Again, most Sarawakians will feel that there's that some political move just to get Sarawakians to support. Then again, what's the real significance? And most of the time, whenever any Sarawakians or Sabahans come to this side of the world, we will say to Malaya, and say, welcome to Malaysia. So who are we to them? So on the 16th of September, yes, it is an important day. But the real Sabahans and Sarawakians, are they actually in a real platform? Same goes in a lot of, even the previous government, when you have cabinet ministers being appointed there, it's just being a token, because they just fit in numbers. And even some of a lot of stories when you have just representative of Sabah and Sarawakians there, but do they actually play an important role? That still become a question after the 1 year in new government.
Joseph, your thoughts on Malaysia Day?
Well, the question on tokenism really has to, we'll have to look at the language that the national leaders had historically used. We're looking back. Okay, I'll put it back to the first tenure of the current Prime Minister when he took over 81. At least, because I was born an 80s kid, so that's where I grew up. And all the rhetoric I grew up listening to was from basically him. And everyone kind of just took his cue. Essentially, the rhetoric, the clearest rhetoric that indicated, say, maybe Malaya's position on Sabah and Sarawak is XYZ akan dibuat di seluruh Malaysia termasuk Sabah dan Sarawak, which is okay, dude. Essentially, that just betrays a sense of possibly superiority. I don't know. I'm not really in a position to say because I've never been in government. Maybe he can.
We won't out Norman just yet.
Don't worry about it.
So what does Malaysia Day mean to you then? Does it mean anything at all?
Growing up, I, for the longest time, I thought it was the state governor's birthday.
Oh.
Because that's what they told us in the state. We are celebrating September 16 to celebrate the governor's birthday. No mention of Malaysia Day, ever.
Okay. Was that a similar sort of experience for you, Norman?
Back home, the only main celebration in school, right from primary school up to secondary school, it's 31st of August. There's no mention of 16 of September. It was seen as a minor day in a lot of schools. Only recently, nobody knows about the date of the independence in Sarawak, which is on the 22nd of July. They just started to celebrate a couple of years ago, and you see everyone dressed as white. It is important. I think what's missing in a lot of our history books is that even to our friends here in Malaya, in West Malaysia, nobody knows about the formation of the Federation of Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
Even to a point, some friends are saying why Sabah and Sarawakans are so sensitive when, for example, the map of Sabah and Sarawak looks smaller than the Western Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
And even recent gaffe by one of the TV stations confused between Sabah and Sarawak.
No.
That it was on TV on National Day on 31st of August. That created a buzz. That further, you know, that created that sort of growing disparity between East and West Malaysia. And there's always that sort of feeling of inferior. Sabah and Sarawak is always being inferior towards Malaya. And people, now, my question usually I throw to friends back home. Do we talk to each other? Do we try to bridge the differences or even talk about similarities?
Well, come the 16th of September, that's all we're talking about. We're talking about building bridges and how we're one big happy family. And you can't deny the fact that the media is inundated with stories of Sabah and Sarawak. So the question I put to the both of you is, who do you feel is the intended audience for these stories on East Malaysia?
Guess it's as good as mine. I don't know. I've been a bit of a, well, I've worked for quite a few news organizations, so the modus operandi tends to be the same, at least for the national level players. Essentially, I mean, at least when it was under the previous government, there was a lot of, I'd say, not collusion, but cooperation, as they like to put it, between media owners, media organizations, and the government to kind of play up this whole picture of unity, which happens every, like you said, between August 31st, September 16th. There would be meetings between top editors and the whichever minister in charge to explain to them, this is what we want to project this year, and blah, blah, blah. This is the outline, the timeline we're looking for. You have this kind of freedom to choose certain kind of stories, but the overall message has to be XYZ. Cool. Everyone goes back to their offices and tells everyone, okay, we're forming a team. We're going to do XYZ. And everyone sets out to do it, comes back, mocks up page, put all stories together, blah, blah, blah. Fancy picture people, kids waving their flags in their traditional costumes, yada, yada, yada. Bang, out on September 16th. Everyone does the same thing.
What happens on September the 17th?
Back to normal.
Business as usual.
Was it much the same for you during your days at Malaysia Kini, Norman?
I think it was a struggle, even for me, as a journalist, as also a social media editor. Because as a social media editor, I monitor the traffic and things like that. And coming, you know, I've covered the Sarawak state election. That's when a lot of stories from Sarawak will come up. You know, all sorts of Tom, Dick and Harry, corruption there and here. Some special stories, but not so special. You know, one of the struggles that a lot of East Malaysian journalists do face, sometimes we try to pitch to our editors. And sometimes some editors, not just me alone, I share the same sentiment with other friends that they share. That sometimes editors tell you, anyone's going to read it? Does it get any traffic? Anyone's going to click?
But it's a Malaysian story.
It is a Malaysian story. But there's sort of questions that we get thrown back. And usually what we will say, our responses to our editors is that if we do not feed, if we do not write these kind of stories, nobody's going to read. If we do not make it a norm that they are the other side of Malaysians, Sabah and Sarawak, and what are their concerns? The same thing when we have stories on Orang Asli. It's not just Orang Asli because they are Malaysians as well. And do we know and empathise the stories, the hardships, or even sometimes feel-good stories? You know, traffic should not be the indicator of the kind of stories that any journalist should do. It should be the newsrooms, I mean, the editor should take a lead in bringing that sort of agenda on the table.
Norman, I'm really glad that you mentioned that, because I'd like to go into both your specialities of media coverage shortly, but we're going to have to take a break first. I'm speaking to Norman Goh, formerly of Malaysia Kini, and Joseph Sipalan of Thomson Reuters about tokenism in the media in the run-up to Malaysia Day. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Stay tuned to this BFM Malaysia Day special presented by Masing. This BFM Malaysia Day special is presented by Masing.
Welcome back to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture. I'm Sumitra Selvaraj, and with me today are Norman Goh, formerly of Malaysia Kini, and Joseph Sipalan of Thomson Reuters. We're discussing tokenism in the media in the run-up to Malaysia Day. Joseph, I know that you've worked with the Borneo Post before. Mm-hmm. Could you explain to me, what is the news coverage like in the run-up to Merdeka when you are in East Malaysia?
Now I'm not too sure, because that was like, oh man, more than 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So might have changed a bit. But then it was, it's just a holiday. Yeah, fine. I mean, not really just a holiday, but I mean, the focus wasn't that intense as opposed to, say, what the papers like the Star or NSD did or would do typically. There's like, again, it's very, very localized. If it's something that your average Joe sitting in a coffee shop in KK or somewhere further out in Sandakan, if they don't care about it, probably not going to run it.
Mm.
Because, again, it's really localized. You're only serving that market. And if that market just couldn't give a why waste space? Because you've only got so much real estate to work with. So
sure.
You choose the stories that will get the most readership. And attract as much advertising as you can.
Okay. So you mentioned localized content. Let me ask you this. When does your identity as an East Malaysian feel the strongest?
Can I go on record to say that?
Go ahead.
Say it. Say it.
When I'm drinking. No, it's... I think I've been in this industry a bit too long to, so I'm a little bit desensitized to it.
Mm.
Even things that are euphoric, like say, for example, May 9th. 2 weeks later, people are saying, it'll take time to sink in. And for me, it's just like, just a different news cycle. Okay, let's go.
Mm.
So, all this stuff about, you know, feeling East Malaysian, feeling West Malaysian. Yeah. You're Malaysian, you're not.
Norman?
I remember when I had this discussion about Sarawak for Sarawakians back then.
Yep.
I had this discussion with a good friend of mine, Dr. Andrew Area. And I told him, I said, you know, there's a sense of state nationalism coming out, you know, it's for the state, it's for Sarawak. And I read out, many of us don't realise it's quite racist. You know, coming back and they said, oh, you orang Malaya, you've been in West Malaysia too long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, things like that. And the words like Ulun Malaya comes about.
What does that mean?
It means...
Malaya people, basically.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And, you know...
Said with a mild eye roll as well, from
yes.
the sounds of it.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. You know, it's so frustrating that we have so many family members who are staying over this side of the world. And, you know, we don't work in Sabah and Sarawak, we're working here. And the sort of frustration that we have is that every time we go home, there's a growing sense of xenophobic towards
West Malaysians.
Yes. I mean, towards fellow Malaysians.
I'm glad you said that.
Malaysians. I mean, you know... I had my first experience when, you know, I told you earlier, Sumitra, right after graduation, I grew up my entire life in Kuching.
Mm-hmm.
Born and bred, went to university in Kuching. My first job experience was actually in Singapore.
Right.
Then after 2014, I went back to Malaysia. It was in KL.
Mm.
I had a huge shock of my life.
Culture shock.
It was a culture shock because... You know, for a lot of East Malaysians, it's like going to a kopitiam. People are segregated. I mean, automatically segregated according to the race. It's some places, it's not, it's just weird, you know, why people are behaving that way. You know, even sometimes when I go around, it's like, oh, muka Cina, tapi cakap Melayu tak ada pela. They're like, or sometimes they say, oh, you speak good English. Oh, I was like thinking in my heart, Sabahans and Sarawakans can't speak good English. So, it's sort of, you know, why do we have to label us in that way? That's sort of, you know, the same thing with Sabah and Sarawakans labeling fellow Malaysians from this side of the world.
So what would you say your identity is then?
Malaysian. That's it. You know, I have friends who come up to me and say, oh, you look Chinese, but you don't look Chinese. What are you?
It's so helpful.
It is. even JJ, some friends are, oh, you Cina ka?
That's because it is, man. I can blame my dad for that. He's got this.
Yeah. Can I ask whether either one of you have experienced, personally experienced tokenism before?
Good question.
Tokenism, I mean,
I don't know about that. Because, I mean, as far as at least professionally, I suppose I may have been a little bit aggressive. So it's like they don't really treat me like a token. Or at least where I remember anyway. You're aggressive in the workplace. They're just going to sit up and notice. So it's not really tokenism. No, I don't think so.
Norman?
I think not at all. Even in Singapore, when I was working in Singapore, working here in
different country.
I know, different country. It's fine. but then they know which state you come from. That's fine. Coming here, I think I do agree with JJ. We're kind of aggressive.
Okay.
Aggressive in a way is not in a bad way, but
assertive.
Very assertive, very firm. And all of us are recognised based on our skills.
And therefore, don't take me for granted.
Yeah. It's not like, oh, we have a team. Or we must have a representative from Sabah and Sarawak. That should not be. I mean, we should be recognised based on our contributions.
So I ask you, do you feel that there ever is a place for tokenism? For example, if you're talking about representation or quotas in order to be able to push minority rights.
Do you think there should be tokenism in women becoming CEOs?
So this is a good question. I personally don't believe in tokenism. I believe in opportunity. I believe in a bigger pie rather than a bigger slice of the pie.
There you go. I think people should be recognized of their, you know, who they are. It doesn't matter whether you come from and things like that. As long as you're the best person for the job, there you go. You should be.
Do you see a difference between diversity and what we have in Malaysia, which is basically socially engineered tokenism?
Well, on the face of it, we do have diversity, sure.
But natural diversity is different from socially engineered diversity.
Yes and no. I mean, it was, well, you could blame the British for creating it first anyway.
It always goes back to the British.
But you know, with everything, right, if you want to own your successes, you have to own your failures. And also own whatever problems you've had before. You can't push it off on anyone else. This issue of, like, say, diversity, representation, equal rights, or equality, equitable, you know, distribution of wealth, all these long jargony things that all these politicians talk about.
And journalists, by the way.
Yeah, because politicians say it.
And journalists report about it.
I'm going to type this for the 1,347th time. Racial and religious harmony and wealth, diversity, blah, blah, blah.
We should just have all of these tropes on a cut and paste, no? So we can just drop them
and
in.
What
makes you think we don't?
And they love to use this, unity in diversity. Yeah. I just
they're on former government.
No. It's also the tagline for in Indonesia, Bineka Tunggal Ika. That's what they use in Indonesia too.
Different country, lah.
And again.
But anyways, coming back to the whole thing, I think what Malaysians need to do really is kind of look back at history properly. I mean, this thing about tokenism, all of it kind of has its roots on partly on how history has been interpreted. So the formation of Malaysia, for example, what is the significance of September 16? We talk so much about August 31st as the date of independence for the Federated States of Malaysia.
Yes.
Great. Also the same date that Sabah was quote-unquote liberated from the British. They basically said, we can't afford you anymore by 1963. Sarawak a little bit earlier, maybe about 2 weeks earlier, you know, July 22nd. Why isn't that just recognized? Why don't you just say it out instead of saying September 16th, Malaysia Day? This is like our national independence. And August 31st is our national day.
Because a fractured history scares people.
Yeah, it is fractured, as it is.
And there is nothing wrong with a fractured history.
You just have to know it and own it, right? But, I mean, again, before we progress to any kind of discussion as to how are we going to fix this, what went wrong, I mean, just go back to the source of it. Let's get everyone on the same page first.
How do we do that?
Education, obviously. Mm-hmm. But again, how are you representing history? Those are just very basic dates that I've given out. August 31st, mm-hmm. which would be for Sabah and Malaya. Mm-hmm. Just different years. 57 for Malaya, 63 for Sabah. July 22nd for Sarawak, 63. Singapore, I forgot. When was Singapore? But anyways,
by the different country.
It is part of the history.
Yes,
and that can't also should not be a token, right? Mm-hmm.
You're
because
right.
Whether or not you like Singaporeans, you know,
yeah, because that's still part of history. I mean,
if they didn't agree to it, Malaysia might not have happened.
It would be a very different Malaysia, if that at all.
Hence, if we want to have some sort of progress on the narrative. Have to go back to that historical point and get everyone to agree. Is this how we're going to tell history from now on, as opposed to the mishmash of whatever they've told over the past decades?
Do you agree, Norman?
I totally agree. I remember last year when I spent about 2 months in the States. It was during the midterms. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine threw me a question, but what are the values and principles of nation building? I couldn't answer.
Do you believe in nation building?
I believe in nation building. I mean, like what JJ has mentioned, we have to look back at our own history and we need to know the history. What made Malaysia, Malaysia? Why are these states important? Why are the struggles difficult? Those challenges. Why do you not talk about so much about, you know, what race you are, what religion you are, that much as much today? Of course, we'll blame it on social media. Then the education plays a very important part of telling a story. What kind of story that we want to tell? You know, what, like what I mentioned earlier, what makes Malaysians Malaysians? Now, should I be known like, oh, I'm Cina, I'm Chinese, but I have a Bidayuh blood. But eventually, I will be seen as just a Malaysian. That is more important.
Okay, so that's the role of education. We all sit here as members of the media, past and present.
Yes.
What can we do as media organisations to improve diversity without resorting to tokenism, without yanking out the same stories between the 31st of August and the 16th of September, year in, year out?
Well, I can't speak from the perspective of my current employer because, I mean, it's a different, perspective they're looking at. It's more globalized. And,
I agree.
You know, but I suppose local media really just need to focus on telling stories.
Malaysian stories.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, stories. I mean, any story is an important story if you even think that it's worth pursuing, then there's probably something there. Just do it.
Isn't it important how you tell the story, though?
Sure. But again, right, it's really you have to land a story first, and then whatever comes after that, you have to think about it. I'm just... I, at least through my experience working with the local media here, there seems to be a lack of interest among the upper echelon in, you know, pursuing stories that are of, you know, national import, and basically just telling the human story of Malaysia. There's a lack of interest in that. Severe, actually. Quite very, very few stories on it.
We spoke about this earlier, Norman, outside the studio, about how there's been a general dumbing down of what we see in mainstream media, for example. And it's sad. It's sad that there are stories out there that deserve to be told that aren't being told, that are being sold out for sex and scandal and celebrity.
Yeah. Yeah, remember I told you earlier, the 3S. This is what we observe in a lot of media. 3S, sex, scandal and celebrity. The celebrity is in the Malay form. Mm-hmm. It's S. In, you know, sometimes I even spoke to other editors from other news. They tend to, you know, come out with stories that look like a piecemeal. It's like, I've done my part, I've done my story and that's it. But there's no sense of a belonging, of creating that sort of narrative of human interest stories. That's, you know, sometimes when I go back and read stories, even the topic of a celebrity decided to take off his, you know, her hijab, that's a top story. Mm. But that, does it really tell the true story of what Malaysians are facing? Unfortunately, no. The type of stories where not just Sabah, there's Sarawak. What about, have you heard any stories on Perlis? Rarely. Rarely. What about, again, talking about what about, when any kind of stories or human interest stories where JJ was talking about, there's always another group of people who say, what about this story? What about this? What about that? The what about tism? It's annoying. You know, when we try to tell stories, it's a story of every type of Malaysians. Doesn't matter which class you are from. Again, we shouldn't be viewing ourselves as social classes.
But who is this every Malaysian? What does he or she or they look like? What do they sound like? What do they believe in?
Just like everyday people. You know, sometimes, you know, although I left journalism just a couple months ago, I sat down and listened to the stories of those just cleaners, even homeless people in the streets. If I don't go to Jalan Bukit Nanas, for example, then I won't know the story of how Sabahans and Sarawakians getting tricked or tricked into working in KL and lost their IC and they become homeless and they can't go back. Now, these are the stories that people would like to listen to. But again, Haditha's to say, oh, this kind of story has no traffic. My advice I would really tell my friends as journalists, push for it. Because when that hunch come in, you know, these kind of stories will get a lot of traffic. Because what moves people in our stories these days is not about the 3S. Mm-hmm. It's about resilience. It's about, and again, I'm throwing the word, resilience, strength, courage. But it exists every day. But unfortunately,
did they give you guys a handbook when you join the government? These are the keywords that you're supposed to say
on 31st of August and 16th of September,
give
right?
Give him a chance, Joseph.
But what? It's not a handbook. But people are naturally moved by emotions and stories like this because people think it's just a fantasy. But in actual fact, it's not. It exists every day.
Well, you said it yourself, Joseph. You said, go out there and tell every story that there is.
Yeah, sure.
So why shouldn't it be stories of strength and resilience and courage?
It should be stories of everything. But, I mean, Again, just trying to cut back the drama a little bit and making it a little bit more... We have to make sure every story is grounded. That's how you tell a solid story. It has to be grounded in reality. But everyone needs to remember that when you're in journalism, there are two sides they have to deal with that you have to balance. So one would be the fact that you are working for a salary and you need to do certain things, deliver certain types of stories so that your organization can turn a certain type of revenue. Sure, that's a given. You work anyway, it's the same thing. But journalism, unlike many, many other professions, has the public service side to it. And reporters, editors, nobody should forget that. Problem with this whole tokenism thing is because of this sense, and again, if you're looking at what happened under the previous administration, the leadership of these news, the mainstream media tended to be under a lot of pressure directly from the government.
Oh, yes.
To kind of like deliver a certain kind of
narrative. I'd say under the thumb, right under the thumb.
Yeah, could argue that, yes. So they were under so much pressure to deliver a specific kind of narrative that the government wants to project, that, you know, you forget the public service aspect of it. You're focused exclusively on what should I do or what can I do to deliver X, Y, Z. And that's all they do. And because of year on year, you keep doing the same thing, you kind of forget what else you're doing. So if journalism, Malaysian journalism, wants to kind of project or help, you know, bridge the divide, is the buzz phrase.
Building bridges.
Yeah. If they want to do that, then, you know, just do your job. Do your job properly. And things will build from there.
Okay. Earlier on, you mentioned the need to be able to kind of call a spade when it comes to our fractured history. Okay. When the lines have been scored so deeply, when the fracture is, it's there along racial and cultural lines, is it ever possible to heal?
I don't know, man. Look at the States. What's happening there? They're a very young nation, too. There's about 200 plus years.
Yes.
Yeah, really young. Whoa, what?
We're 56.
56. Plenty of time. Let's not put the cart before the horse. Right? Let's just kind of do things on our own time. Saying that, oh, this is not going to heal. I mean, who knows, man? Maybe it'll heal in my kids' time, my grandkids.
And that is a positive enough note to wrap up this interview. I've been speaking to Norman Goh and Joseph Sipalan about tokenism in the media in the run-up to Malaysia Day. If you missed any part of this interview or any of our previous Live and Learn interviews, you can download the podcasts from our website, bfm.my, or the BFM app, or Spotify. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
BFM's Malaysia Day special is presented by Mussing. Reinvent spaces, enhance life.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.